would you buy his ale? Merry Christmas.
The WYSL stations present an hour of truth for the battered but proud people of the Empire State. From the financial and entertainment epicenter of New York City to the sleeping and empty small cities and towns of upstate, which once bustled with manufacturing, mining, and farming. We all know from inspiration, history, and nature, we deserve a return to the success and growth of generations past, a birthright being squandered by corruption in Albany, and the depredations of an insecure, scheming mountebank posing as governor, who loathes both us and himself. As liberty beckoned to enslaved peoples behind the Iron Curtain via American broadcasts after World War II, we now say, believe, rise, and join us. Welcome to Radio Free New York.
Hello, everybody. This is Andrew Hollister, your host of Radio Free New York, broadcasting live from Czech Republic. That's right. I'm out. I'm on vacation. I'm visiting family in the Czech Republic. Monday, I broadcasted from Prague. Today, I'm actually in a place called Rovensko pod Troskami, and it's basically a little village under a castle that was used for defensive purposes, and it's a pretty cool little town, only about 1,200 people here, and I just want to reach out to everybody, say thank you for joining us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. We are broadcasting live on WYSL all through Western New York, and also everywhere on the internet, on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Since I'm out of the country, although I'm doing it live, I won't be able to take phone calls. So please, if you have a question, a comment, something you want me to talk about, go ahead, go on the Facebook feed or the YouTube feed or the Twitter feed. Post your comment or your question there. I'll check it as often as I can, usually between breaks and with little gaps here and there. I also want to say we're growing our YouTube subscriptions. So if you're hearing this show, whether it's on the radio or somewhere else, we had a goal to hit 100 subscribers last week to unlock the next set of features in YouTube, and we blew right past that. So I want to thank all of you for helping me get there and say the next milestone to unlock the next set of features on YouTube is 1,000 subscribers. So even if you don't typically go on YouTube to watch the show, if you could just sign in real quick, go to search for Andrew C. Hollister on YouTube, hit subscribe, help me unlock the next set of features. It's going to help help us just push more and more of this information out there for people to find. So a little bit about Czech Republic. Some people sent me some questions and some other stuff, so I'll just give you guys a little bit of information. Somebody was wondering, what am I doing in Czech Republic? So my wife is from Czech Republic. This is where she grew up. This is where she was born. Where I am is about 20 minutes away from her father's house where she grew up. And this area is really cool. Many of you know I'm an outdoorsman. I love being outside. I love hiking. I love hunting. Just really enjoy nature. And where I am is actually called the Bohemian Paradise. So it's very similar to our Adirondacks, except it's surrounded by castles and chateaus, which is pretty cool. You see stuff that some people say, oh, I thought that was only in Disney. It's like, no, there's real castles out there. The castle I'm closest to, I think, is 900 years old. Very, very cool structure, very cool thing to see. For those of you on the live stream, I'm actually going to go ahead and play a slideshow of some pictures I've taken as I've kind of been going through this week. So these are pictures of things I've seen, places I've gone. You guys can check that out. So I'm in Rovensko, a population of about 1,300 people, so pretty small, but there's a lot of hiking trails, there's a lot of biking trails. They have outdoor rock climbing. That's actually really popular here. So people just go out and they climb the rocks. There's some really, really difficult ones, and then some more like intermediate difficulty ones. But the climbs are pretty high. They're like, oh, let's go for a short climb. It's only about 200 meters. And that, to me, that's a pretty, pretty high climb. They actually reuse the rope multiple times throughout the climbs, because the rope might only be 80 meters tall. Then you cut that in half because you've got to belay somebody. So they'll actually belay each other off the rocks as they climb up multiple times. So very interesting. The other thing that we enjoy doing here in the snow is Czech sledding, which is very different than the sledding I grew up doing. So when I grew up, sledding was go to a park that usually has a steep hill, and you kind of climb to the top, you get on the sled, you slide down to the bottom, and you repeat throughout the day till you're just too tired to walk up to the top again. So down the hill, up the hill, down the hill, up the hill. Here, what they have is they have mountains, and you take a bus to the top of the mountain, and you have like a toboggan-style sled or one of the steering-style sleds, and you actually sled on trails down the mountain through all the villages along the way. The adults usually, when they get to each village, they stop, they get off the sled, they go into the pub, they have a beer, and then they get back on the sled and continue sledding down to the next village. And it takes hours to go from the top of the mountain to the bottom. So most people make a day out of it, especially if you're stopping at the pubs. You can easily spend 4 to 6 hours sledding, and you never once climb back up the hill. You just take a bus to the top, and then you end at the bottom, you get on the bus, you go home. So just a different experience, something totally different that I figured I'd share with you guys as I'm here, let you know about some of the different cultural things that go on in Czech Republic. I told you guys that last time I was on the air with you, I was broadcasting from Prague. And the very next day, I actually got the opportunity to, as I was exploring, I found they had a museum of communism. And that's kind of important to them because they had communism up until 1991. So they're very recently, as a culture, as a society, they have come out of communism very recently. It's very fresh in many people's minds. Most of the people that you meet on the streets in Czech Republic were alive during communism. So I took the time to go to the museum, check it out, because I wanted to see what the perspective was like. You know, I've learned about, obviously, communism and socialism through the public school system, the history books, history class, but I wanted to get an idea and see what the perspective was like from people who actually lived through it and can talk about it today. So the first thing I wanted to do, I realized, and this totally makes sense, but I wasn't thinking it as I went into the museum, that communism and socialism were very, very deeply intertwined. So although I was going into the Museum of Communism, there was also obviously a lot of information about socialism and the impact of socialism on their country as well. So before I dive too deep into this, I wanted to read to you guys this thing from Investopedia about the difference between communism and socialism. Because as I was standing there in the museum reading, you know, the different things that were happening in this country, I could hear people, and more typically younger people, I think they were probably from Germany, and they were asking, well, is communism and socialism the same? Like, what are the differences? And so I figured before I talked about communism, I wanted to talk about, and we'll talk about socialism too, I wanted to talk about kind of what the differences are. And this is just like a nice little block of text to explain it. So it says, communism and socialism are economic and political structures that provide equality and seek to eliminate social classes. The two are interchangeable in some ways, but different in others. And this is where I think people get confused because they do share so many similarities. Sometimes people think they're one and the same. So it goes on to say, in a communist society, the working class owns everything, and everyone works towards the same communal goal. There are no wealthy or poor people, all are equal, and the community distributes what it produces daily only on need. Nothing is obtained by working more than what is required. Communism frequently results in low production, mass poverty, and limited advancement. It goes on to say that poverty spread so widely in the Soviet Union in the 1980s that their citizens revolted. Before I continue on about the socialism aspect, I would maybe add to this this piece here. It says there are no wealthy people or poor people. Humanity always gets involved in this, and there are wealthy people. It's just never the common folk. It's always the people at the top. So going on to socialism. Like communism, socialism's main focus is on equality. But workers earn wages that they can spend as they choose, while the government, not citizens, owns and operates means for production. So that's a big distinction there is things get nationalized in socialism. And we've talked on the show many times about socializing medicine and Medicare for all. So workers receive what they need to produce and survive, but there is no incentive to achieve more, leaving little motivation. Some countries have adopted aspects of socialism, and this goes on, you know, further, but basically, so the big differences between communism and socialism is basically communism will allow for people to still maybe own their business, whereas socialism, the government will take and start nationalizing production and businesses. And I actually learned as I was going through this that both were happening in Czech Republic as they were going through their communist regime. So we're coming up here on the quarter of an hour. So we're going to take just a really quick break here, about 60 seconds. And then I'm going to tell you what I found in this museum, kind of some interesting stuff that I wanted to share with you guys. So we will be back in about a minute. We'll treat you like a family at Mark's Pizzeria. We'll treat you like a family at Mark's Pizzeria. Fresh and good, simply the best in your neighborhood. Come in, we'll get to know you, call you by name, and we can bring it to you any time of the day. Mark's Pizzeria, we'll treat you like a family. Mark's Pizzeria.
Take it, Tony.
How's that, Pete?
Terrific, man. Hold on. Hello. Oh, man, now I really got the blues.
What's the skinny, Pete?
Furnace won't fire and the house is freezing. What am I going to do, brother?
Call Taylor, 500-HELP. Their heating experts will fix things up and have you singing in no time.
500-HELP? Now that's a hot number.
I think I'm really getting it, man.
Call Taylor, 500-HELP.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
Guys, I am back here, Andrew Hollister, your host of Radio Free New York, just talking about my time in the Museum of Communism in Czech Republic. The thing that intrigued me about this museum and the reason I went is communism was active up until the 90s, and it was actually Czechoslovakia at the time. It wasn't even Czech Republic yet. So I wanted to go in there. I wanted to get kind of a firsthand look at what it looked like from people who are still alive and who can talk about it. So so first thing, obviously, the draw was, you know, they had it in the 90s. The rest of it was just kind of what I learned. A lot of this was kind of in the history books, but it was really accentuated. You know, it was just very emotional in there, very sincere. You know, this was a really big deal to their country. It was, and not in a positive way by any means. So you have kind of some of the things that you always hear about. You know, they talk about how people couldn't travel freely at all, and how their government spied on them. The people were in constant fear all the time because there were not just one, but multiple secret police departments set up to spy on people. set up to check on their finances, set up to try to be undercover and catch people who maybe disagreed with communism. And if you said things against communism or against the government, you would end up in a labor camp or worse. I mean, literally, freedom of speech, it did not exist. It did not exist there. It was punishable by crime. It was a crime, and it was punishable. You could end up in a camp. You could end up what they would call disappeared. You know, nobody just ever saw you again. So that was interesting because you know, in the United States, some of the stuff that they were talking about, we have, and we have being proposed right now. I mean, we have people proposing that certain speech become illegal, and that you can get punished for it and fined. And, you know, this is what the communist regime had. So it was very, very eye-opening just seeing the level of, I mean, they had the cameras, they had hidden cameras there, listening devices, like all this stuff that they used to make sure that people were only talking positively about communism and socialism in Czechoslovakia. The other thing that was interesting to me, I guess, is that everything was about the collective. And it's very different than America and the United States today, because many things are about, say, your family specifically, your children, or if you're a young single person, a lot of times it's about yourself. I mean, people absolutely, they volunteer, they do support other causes, and many of them support other people as well, especially when it comes to discrimination. But this was on a totally different level. This was, you will do this for your country, you will do this for communism, and it didn't matter if it hurt your friends or your family, you did it. And that was the mindset that was pushed and created and put on these people, is everything you do for the country. Even the work you did, you know, if you were a dirt shoveler, they would build like propaganda and say, oh, so-and-so shoveled so much dirt for communism, and like, they're the world's best dirt shoveler, and just like things like that. Like, everything was so, centric around the government and around the country. And you really couldn't do any one good thing without it being in the name of your country and for your country, and nothing else. And if you did something that was good and it wasn't for the country, and you didn't like proclaim it to be good for the country, or that you were doing it for the country, you could end up arrested. I mean, that's how it was. They had one of their sports teams wanted to go to a world championship. And because they wanted to compete with other nations, they all ended up arrested and in jail. So, I mean, it's just very difficult to comprehend what it must have been like living in those conditions. And it didn't stop there. You know, the propaganda really, it's interesting. Their political posters look way, way different than ours do today, obviously. But it was interesting because a lot of their propaganda was centered around communism leading the world, and them hiding from their people that they were so far behind technologically. So they didn't want people to know when advancements were made in other countries. They didn't want people to know if other countries were doing well. They wanted them to know that they were in a communist country, and that's just the best possible thing that they could ever have. And because of that, they didn't allow people to travel freely, because if people got out of the country, they would actually see how far behind they really were. And that would be a big problem for the government. So people could not leave the country on vacation. Some people could, but it was extremely restricted. You were a higher up. You could only go to very specific countries and very specific places. And it was very, very controlled. And if you were coming into the country, where you went was also very controlled. And I'm going to talk about that later, because one of my friends was actually alive during this time, and we talked about it, and he kind of told me some of those experiences, and I'll share that with you. So really what came down to in this museum is showing how communism and socialism really kind of destroyed their way of life in this country. All the way down to, like, if you were successful, you got in trouble for that. So they had examples of farmers, like some of the top producing farmers in the nation who were like really, really good at making food and producing and being efficient. The government nationalized their farm and sent those people to labor camps because they were doing too well and they couldn't have that. So they nationalized farming. They took away those farms just to ensure that the government had control over that and nobody was, you know, doing better than somebody else. Because of this, they had constant shortages of food, hygiene products, and other supplies. The same things that we see in Venezuela today, they experienced then when they were going through this. So it's really, really interesting to just see the two parallel and see, you know, how these people went through this. On the wall, when you come in, maybe by the fourth or fifth display, there was a quote by Winston Churchill on the wall, and it really summed up everything that I was seeing as I went room to room, and I was just reading year after year how things were going. And the quote is, "If you put the communists in charge of the Sahara Desert, there will be a shortage of sand in 5 years." And that just like perfectly aligned. I mean, they put this quote on the wall because they just felt like this quote spoke to them. And as I was walking through this museum, it spoke to me too, as I saw shortage after shortage, nationalized industry after nationalized industry, and people struggling and being in poverty and not being able to be successful. Because if they were successful, they would go to a camp and they'd lose whatever they had. All the way down to the service industry became nationalized. You couldn't be a handyman or a plumber or anything. You had to work for the government to do that. So they actually created a black market for woodworkers, plumbers, auto mechanics, everything, because all of that became socialized, became nationalized. And black markets emerged. And it was really risky because people could be persecuted for doing work under the table by the government. You were essentially stealing from your community, according to them, stealing from your country if you did any type of work on the side. So it was very, very interesting, very eye-opening. I'll share with you guys real quick a story from a friend who lived through communism. And then after the break, I'm going to answer some of the questions because I see people are asking about bump stocks being banned, which I absolutely have an opinion about that, and the government shutdown. So I'll definitely get to those here in a minute. So I just happened to be at a restaurant with a friend, and somehow communism came up. Like I said, it's very fresh in their mind. And this friend actually lived half his life in communism, and then the other half of his life, where he's living now, he called it freedom. And that's really, really what it was to him. He explained just how a friend came from another country. He was one of the few people who was allowed into Czechoslovakia at the time. And they'd have these big national demonstrations in the street. And if you didn't show up, you were in trouble. These were mandatory demonstrations. You had to be smiling. You had to look happy. You had to be in formation. And they controlled, when somebody came into the country, where you could be. So you could only see the best. And his friend was there, and he said, "I remember sitting there with my friend, and he saw the smiling faces, and he saw the formations, and he saw everything. And he thought, wow, communism, it must work. It's the best thing on earth. Look at how happy the people are. Nobody isn't smiling." And he said that he couldn't even tell his friend how bad it was. Because if he did, he would potentially, you know, he didn't know who was around, and it wasn't uncommon for family members or friends to tell on each other and then end up in camps. So he couldn't even tell his friend there that, no, it was bad, it was awful. And that person actually left the country and probably told so many people how amazing communism was, how amazing socialism was. But then his face totally lit up because he's told me that he remembers the day that they got freedom. He remembered the day that communism was eliminated in his country, and his face was just so bright and so excited immediately. Like, it's just total change of mood. And he was talking about how bars started to open and pubs, and they started getting supplies coming into their country again. And he said women were really happy because they always had a shortage on feminine hygiene products. So they didn't have those. The rest of the world did, and they didn't. And so that was like a huge thing for women to have those hygiene products. They started having food again. And they were just literally so happy. All he could say is, like, we experienced freedom. We could do what we want. We could work how we want. We could work where we wanted. We could charge what we wanted for our work. And people would constantly just throw parties, buy everybody they knew drinks and food. And it was just like celebration after celebration after celebration. It was freedom. You know, they were leaving. They were living in basically a peaceful slavery. And, you know, we talk often about man would rather live in dangerous freedom than peaceful slavery. And as he was explaining all of this to me, it was just really powerful. So I wanted to share it with you guys. It was just a really cool experience to be there in the museum, see firsthand what was going on from people who were alive during it, and then have a conversation with a friend about it who told me his perspective as he saw it day in and day out as he lived through it. So very cool. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we are absolutely going to talk about Trump banning bump stocks. We're going to talk about that. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, guys. And please keep listening to Radio Free New York.
From Avon Feed and Supply, introducing Dry Shod waterproof footwear. Dry, comfortable feet, even on those warmer days. Avon Feed has a big selection of Dry Shod for men and women, offering fully flexible athletic shoe sizing for great fit and maneuverability. Its exclusive insulation breathes and keeps you warm without bulk, and you'll stay dry top to bottom with state-of-the-art waterproofing. While you're at Avon Feed, find everything for your pet, from feeding bowls to toys, leads, collars, beds, crates, and tie-outs. Avon Feed and Supply has with a big pet chain stores will never have. Tim Cole and his great knowledgeable staff. And if you think you'll save money at that pet superstore, well, think again. While you're at Avon Feed, don't forget the two-legged pets with River Rat Thousand Island cheese and great flavors, including hard-to-find mean and nasty, plus once again nut butters, Nunday mustards, and Rickles pickles. Open weekdays 9 to 6, Saturday 9 to 4. Avon Feed and Supply. West Main Street at the bottom of the hill, just west of the circle.
To the voice of Liberty. WYSL. AM 1040 Avon Rochester, FM 92.1 Rochester, FM 95.5 Spencerport, and WYSL1040.com everywhere.
Tour the days before Christmas. You can tell by the sound. The pace is so nuts, just fast food can be found. Shopping, the school play, decorations, and snow. For quality family food, where can you go? When what to your wondering eyes should appear but a juicy Wahlburger, a frosty root beer, handmade ice cream, crispy fries, even Waldo. Too busy to sit there? Then get it to go. And since Tom Wall's quality and value are things you can see, now you can get home to put up that tree. Tom Wall's wishes your family a season of cheer, a wonderful holiday, and a tasty new year. But just as you're settling tonight in your bed, hark. What's that sound that you hear overhead?
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas to all! And make no mistake, it's not a hamburger. It's Tom Wall's ground steak. Ho,
ho, ho! A holiday greeting from Tom Wall's family to yours. 9 locations in the metro.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
All right. right, guys, this is Andrew Hollister, your host of Radio Free New York. I am transmitting live from Czech Republic. I am here visiting family, so I can't take your call-ins, but I can take your online comments on either Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. Want to thank you guys for listening, and also thank you for streaming in if you're on the internet. I got some comments, some questions here on the live feed, and one of the questions was about the ban on bump stocks. And I actually planned on talking about this because on Monday, those of you who are listening to the show, I said, hey guys, I need all of you to stay engaged. I need you to pay attention. I know it's the holidays. I know it's time for family, but this is the time of year when government always does something bad. Our elected officials know that people detach, they retract, they stop paying attention during the holidays, and something always happens. I had no idea this was going to happen. I wasn't the only person to say this. I know other talk show hosts, other people have said this too, so it's not like I had some crystal ball. It happens every year. History repeats itself. And sure enough, the very next day, Trump signed the ban on bump stocks. Now, here's the thing. Constantly, people on the right will say something along the lines of, you know, Democrats just need a shooting so that they can restrict and take our rights away. Well, the Republicans are doing this too. Which is why I always say, and I encourage you as the listeners to do this as well. I don't refer to it as left versus right or right versus left. I don't refer to it as Republicans against Democrats or Democrats against Republicans. I refer to it as the anti-liberty movement. The people who are working together, regardless of party affiliation, to restrict our rights, to take away the rights of the individual. And that's what's happening right here, right now. A lot of people thought that Trump was going to be the savior for gun rights, especially with Supreme Court justice appointments. And I think those people are really, really upset right now, or they're doing something that I personally am very, very against. And people will ask me all the time. They ask me this on the campaign trail. They would say, Andrew, I can't make my decision about voting for you unless I know if you support the president or not. And my answer has always been, I don't blindly follow any one person. I don't. There are things I support. I support the things that align with my principles and my values. If a person is supporting my principles and my values, I will support those actions. I will support that speech. I'll support that. But if a person steps outside of my principles, outside of my values, outside of my beliefs, I will just as quickly say, I don't agree with that. I'm against that. So it's not about if I support an individual. It's about actions, principles, what you actually do. And it's very different, you know, versus what you say and what you do. Because we see our elected officials say a whole lot of stuff on one side, and on the other side, do actions that are totally, totally different. So it's not a question of if I support the president or if you support the president. It's a question of, is banning bump stocks aligned with your principles, and will you stand for that? Or are you going to be the type of person that says, I'm going to follow him no matter what? Or are you going to be the type of person that says, that's not what I elected you for, stop it, you know, because we need to have this. Otherwise, it doesn't matter what party is in power. If you don't hold anybody accountable, it doesn't matter. So where are we today? As I understand it, I did read like a whole bunch on this. I believe it's March of 2019. If you have a bump stock after March of 2019, you will become a felon. And in fact, if you want to secretly keep your bump stock rifle, well, you might as well just upgrade to a machine gun, because from my understanding, the charges are going to be the same. So why have a lookalike, kind of like a fake clone that doesn't work as well? You know, at that point, you might as well just get the real deal. Because that's where we are right now. Why does this make me upset? I don't personally own a bump stock. Actually, to be honest, if we were to talk about bump stocks, I think they're highly ineffective. They aren't good for control. They're not really good for much of anything, in my personal opinion. And I have experience in firearms background. I'm not going to really go into that. But in my opinion, a bump stock is a little more for fun at home or at the range to have a good time. They're not really effective. They're not really accurate. They're not super easy to control. Yeah, you can do some of those things if you practice a lot. Most people don't have the money to buy that much ammunition. I'm just being straightforward and honest with you. I don't really have a dog in this fight. Bump stocks aren't something that I'm really into, to be honest. But the problem I have with this is it goes against my principles and my beliefs in individual liberty and the right to bear arms, our Second Amendment constitutional right. So I have a big issue with this. The other issue I have is that bump stocks are a non-issue. In fact, if you look at rifles in general, they really aren't an issue. Not the way that the media and elected officials are trying to have you think. So I'll just give you guys some numbers here. I'm big on numbers. I'm big on analytics. I'm big at knowing the facts. So here's the facts. According to the CDC website, which you can go here now, the CDC is the Center for Disease Control. They track every single death in the United States. Every single death. So here's the number in 2017. 2,744,248 deaths in the United States in 2017. Now, I'm going to go back to why that number is so important here in a minute. According to a survey done by Small Arms in the United States, and other surveys and studies line up pretty close to these numbers, firearm ownership in the United States is 120 firearms per 100 residents, or 1.2 guns per person. Now, I know some of the listeners on the show are thinking, I don't own any guns. And then I know there's some other listeners on the show thinking, I own a lot more than one or two guns. It's an average. It averages out. Some of you don't own guns. Some of you own way more than two guns. I get it. But that's the average. So we actually have more firearms than people in this country. Now, here's the thing. Firearm-related deaths in 2017, only 403 of those deaths were related to rifles. 403 deaths. Now, we're not talking assault rifles, and for those of you listening on the air, that I have air quotes for assault rifles because we know that's a made-up term by the media and by politicians. An assault rifle doesn't exist. It's just the way they brand and label firearms that look scary to them. You know, they're black, they've got cool little attachments on them, automatically become a scary assault rifle. So that's regular, just straight-up hunting rifles and then what people would label as assault rifles. 403. What percentage of the deaths is that? Less than a third of 1%. Let me say that again. Less than a third of 1%. So that is the highest it could be. So we're talking about such a small percentage here. If you look at stabbings, death by an edged weapon, four times more. So you're four times more likely to be stabbed to death than you are to be shot with a rifle. Whether it's a hunting rifle, the wannabe assault rifles, or any other type of rifle, you're four times more likely to be stabbed to death. But somehow this became a priority. And I think that's the part that really frustrates me. The fact that this became the priority for the Trump administration, as far as deaths go in this nation, it's just, I'm very unhappy about that on so many different levels. The other thing that's interesting is if you actually take those numbers and base it on mass shootings, which this is their big thing, it'll help prevent mass shootings, the percentage goes down even further. And in 2013, they actually changed the definition of a mass shooting down to only three people. And you could have like a jewelry store rob and go bad and three people get shot. So they're really, really just changing the numbers, changing the definition to make things seem much worse than they are. Don't get me wrong. The fact that 403 people died, that's absolutely terrible. It's tragic. It should not have happened. But as far as issues that we're facing in this country right now, this should not have been a priority. And trampling on people's rights just to make a statement shouldn't have happened. So what are some of the leading causes of death here in the United States? So went to the CDC website right on the homepage. Heart disease, over 600,000 deaths in 2017 versus 400 with rifles. Cancer, just a hair under 600,000 deaths. Accidents, so figure car accidents, unintentional injuries that led to death, that sort of thing, 161,000. Chronic lower respiratory diseases, 154,000. Stroke, 142,000. Alzheimer's, 116,000. Diabetes, 80,000. Influenza and pneumonia, 51,000. And then it goes down. And then the last one here that makes it on this top list is intentional self-harm or suicide, 44,000, almost 45,000. So literally, even suicide outranks deaths by a rifle. Now, in summary, and this is kind of in jest here, but I want you guys to get the idea. Instead of banning bump stocks, if we really cared about protecting life in the United States, I'm not suggesting we ban these things, but if they really cared, if they really wanted to make a difference, they would ban things like fast food, sugar, which I know they tried in New York City, cars, and suicide. Suicide, I think, is technically illegal. It's technically on the books already. If you got rid of those four things, you'd be making up almost all of deaths in 2017. I mean, definitely at least probably 70% of the deaths in the United States. If you got rid of those four things, we would handle 70% of the deaths instead of a third of a percentage. So that's my issue with the bump stock ban. Very, very upset to hear that, to see that this is where the government is focusing their energy. This is where the government is choosing to spend money and to push that political agenda. And when we come back from the break, we're going to take a break here. We're going to take a 1 minute break. I'm going to tell you who else I'm upset with about this ban, because there's another organization that I'm a little disgruntled with right now, very unhappy with them. I'm going to tell you who that is, why that is, when we come back from this break here. I'll be back in a minute, guys.
Lakeville Fire Department presents Primetime Brass, Saturday, January 12th, 2 o'clock at Lakeville Training Grounds. Tickets are $15. Dinner included. Proceeds benefit Honor Flight of Rochester and Lakeville Fire Department. Cash bar and guest appearance by Patriot Guard Riders. Tickets available at Lakeville and Livonia Liquor Stores, Besco, or any Lakeville firefighter. Don't miss Primetime Brass on Saturday, January 12th.
This is attorney Paul Simonelli. At our law firm, we strive to be the one resource you and your family can rely on for practical solutions and trusted advice. Whether you're buying or selling a home, preparing a will or family trust, or starting a business, our focus is giving your legal concern the attention it deserves. We are the one firm you need. We're Simonelli & Simonelli, 1775 Buffalo Road in Gates. Call 235-0980 or visit SimonelliLaw.com.
You're listening to Radio Free New York
on the WYSL stations.
Hey guys, it's Andrew Hollister here, broadcasting live from Czech Republic on Radio Free New York. And just responded before the break to the question about what do I think about the ban on bump stocks. I think it's ridiculous. I think that it's a waste of our time, it's a waste of our resources, and that it will not improve anybody's safety whatsoever, and we should not be banning things like bump stocks. I just don't think it's right. And then I mentioned the top causes of death in the United States. And Michelle commented in and said, yeah, cigarettes cause about 3/4 of what you mentioned. And to that point, I want to bring up when regulations change. And I talked about this a lot over the last year. A lot of people think that regulations are good things, that they're there to protect you, keep you safe. Typically, regulations, although they're worded in such a way that would make you think that, they're really there to keep corporate lobbyists happy. So when you want to talk about things like cigarettes and how bad they are, me being libertarian-minded and liberty-minded, I'm not interested in banning cigarettes. However, once again, if they really cared about people's health, maybe the government would. You know, the government we have right now is definitely, they're all about creating laws, all about creating rules. So if they really wanted to create a law or a rule to help people's health, yeah, cigarettes would probably be pretty high up on that list. But that's not what their concern is. Their concern is keeping corporate lobbyists happy, corporate donors happy. And that's why you see that regulations only change. And this ban on bump stocks is actually a regulation enacted by the president. It did not go through Congress. It wasn't ratified through legislation. It was a regulation. It can technically go away just as quickly as it came. But regulations are typically to keep corporate lobbyists happy. Now, before I move on and talk about the other organization that I'm upset with this about, I want to address the question about the government shutdown. Because somebody commented in and they said, you know, what do you think about the government shutdown? The government shutdown, to me, I have a few thoughts. The first is the government shutting down sounds like a great thing. That would be wonderful. But the problem with the government shutting down is that everybody gets paid anyways. They might not get their paycheck today, but they will get it when the government starts back up. And not only that, I think they get paid like an extra percentage of some sort of back pay fee or something like that for having their paycheck held. So the government shutting down is frustrating on the level of nothing's getting done, but people are still getting paid for it and we're paying them extra. That to me I see as a problem. I think the biggest thing is the people responsible for the shutdown absolutely should not get paid. So people in Congress, people, those elected officials, they should not receive a penny for any of the time that the government shut down. To be honest, some of you might disagree with me on this, and you're welcome to do so. I think that the government departments that are shut down, which there will be a lot that aren't shut down because there'll be necessary services, I forget there's a specific term for them, that even when the government shuts down, they don't actually shut down. So yeah, you'll see like Parks and Rec shut down, but you're not going to see Department of Defense shut down. So those people still get paid, they'll still keep going, they'll still do everything. So the government doesn't even really shut down. But the issue I have with it is this. The government shutdown thing, this is, what, the third or the fourth one that I remember in the last few years. It's now just kind of becoming a, we parade this around as a thing that's going to happen so that we can hold something over somebody's head to get what we want. It doesn't ever end up actually benefiting anybody. And I would ask the question that we asked during the campaign. Okay, government shutdown. Whose kid got a better education? Whose taxes were lowered? Whose kid isn't buried in debt? Who can now, who's got a better job? Who can afford, you know, this insanely expensive health insurance we have now because of the government shutdown? The American people never see those type of results, not that I recall, out of any of the government shutdowns. So I would actually be pro-government shutdown if the government shutting down meant the government stopped spending money until it opened again and it didn't go back and back pay everybody. And I get some people would be upset, especially government employees. My answer would be, well, you didn't go to work, and my employees don't get paid when they don't go to work. But I understand it's probably a touchy subject for those people, to be honest, because they have no control over it. It's really the elected officials. But I would be willing to bet that if government employees and elected officials didn't get paid back pay, or at all, when the government shut down, we'd see a lot less government shutdowns. And on top of that, when the government does shut down, maybe those people would think twice about voting for those representatives. Because we have a big issue here in the United States where we have no term limits in Congress, and these people get elected day in, day out, consistently, year after year after year. And it's not because they're doing a good job. If they were doing a good job, people wouldn't be so upset. The government wouldn't be shutting down. They wouldn't be fighting. So they're not doing a good job. They're just staying in office with name recognition and the power of incumbency. So those are my thoughts on the government shutdown. I'm not a fan of it for those reasons. So moving on here, I want to hit... Oh, and it looks like maybe our live stream on Facebook went down. So if that happened, I apologize, guys. You'll have to catch on YouTube or Twitter. Yeah, apparently not just the government shutting down, but also apparently Facebook. So before I move on to the next piece here, because we've got a short period of time, we talked about the banning of bump stocks. I want to talk about Ben Wassel. Who there who's listening right now knows who Ben Wassel is? If you don't know who he is, you probably haven't heard the last few episodes of my show. Ben Wassel is a military veteran. He served multiple tours. He's combat disabled, I believe, at 90%. He was also the first man victimized by the New York Unsafe Act. And yes, I'm calling it the Unsafe Act because it has not made anybody in this state any safer. In fact, it's actually hurt more people, and it's hurt our veterans tremendously. It's very important to me. So he has a court appeal on January 17th at 10 a.m. It's at the courthouse on 50 East Avenue in Rochester. I will personally be there. I believe Larry Sharp, who ran for governor last time around, he will also be there. We need to show up. We need to tell the courts. We need to be there and show them that the people of New York State have had enough. They have really had enough with how this is going. We've had enough with the SAFE Act. We don't want any more infringements on our rights. We want to be free. So I'm asking you to show up. The address again is 50 East Avenue, January 17th, 10 a.m. I will be there. Please come, you know, dress professionally, whatever that means to you, you know, and be respectful. We will be in court, and I would like us to have as big of a showing as we possibly can. So I've got about 2 minutes here. I'm going to try to ram this in. The organization that I am most upset with about the bump stock ban is the NRA. The reason I'm upset with it is the NRA backed the ban on bump stocks. They encouraged and promoted it. I have a big issue with that. Then, when the ban for bump stocks went out, the NRA went to its membership and asked for donations. Gun control is good for the NRA. And I know I'm probably going to make some of you upset. Listen, I'm an NRA member. I have years left on my membership. I am very, very upset with them. And I'll be writing an open letter to them, which I'll probably share with you guys in a future show, and I'll post on the website too. If you decide you want to take pieces of it, you can, and tell them really how you feel about what they're doing with your Second Amendment rights. But you know what? So there's some other organizations that have shown through this, and that's the Firearms Policy Coalition and Gun Owners of America. They filed a lawsuit against the government when they created the bump stock ban. So while they filed a lawsuit, the NRA called up its donors and asked for donations. I have a big, big issue with that. I've been a supporter of GOA as well. I'm a GOA member. I'm also a GOA New York member. And I will be writing a letter to the NRA asking them for a refund on the remaining years of my membership. I don't know. I've probably got 2-3 years on my membership. I don't know if they'll give me a prorated refund or not, but I am going to ask for that refund. I'm going to take the refund and split it in half. Half will go towards the GOA lawsuit against the bump stocks. The other half will go towards the legal fund for Ben Wassel. So that's what I plan to do. I firmly believe in voting with my money. And we are wrapping up here. We're just about out of time. So I want to say thank you guys for listening to the show. And I will be back on Radio Free New York. I'll see you guys next time.